Welcome to the show. This is Deep and the Wild with Melissa Hawks. Today's guest is Ashley Rohner, and I'm so excited for you to be joining us. We're going to talk about all sorts of woo-woo things, as she says, and also about grief, a really important and beautiful conversation about grief. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Me this morning. Ashley and I have known each other for 7 years now. I can't believe it has been that long.
It's crazy.
We met 7 years ago, in a month, I think.
Yeah. September.
We met. Yeah. Yeah. It's so crazy. And then what's really interesting, I think we had started getting to know each other a little bit before then, but I feel like our friendship has built over the years since we actually met in real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to just start by you telling us a little bit about yourself and also, the projects that you're working on right now and where people can find you on the internet.
Okay. I am Ashley and I live in Idaho. I moved around a bit when I was younger, but I came back here. I would consider myself, the most important things to know about me, I consider myself a witch, Reiki practitioner, a tarot reader, an artist, and a sister. I am currently just trying to connect with my body. I think that's my biggest project right now that I'm working on, and finding different ways to create. And you can find me at Ashes and Intuition on Instagram and Ashley Lovely on Instagram. It's ASHLEELOVELEE.
Great. I just want to say I have experienced Ashley both as a Reiki practitioner and as a tarot reader, and both have been amazing experiences. She has performed Reiki on me both in person and virtually, and such a gift for me. Such a gift. I remember someone else last year offered to do a Reiki session for me, and I was just like, oh. You know how when you can feel someone's energy and you're I don't know if I want that messing with mine.
There's the energetic boundaries and consent that you really need to learn as a way just to connect with your body and your intuition. And so if something doesn't vibe, say no thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you tell us, I have a lot of questions that I want to get to, but you brought up Reiki.
Yeah.
And so I would love for you just to share with the audience, maybe people who haven't experienced Reiki before, what it is and how you go about practicing that.
Yeah. I didn't ever physically experience Reiki until I was attuned, which is really uncommon. But I had just felt called to it, so I took the leap and said yes. But Reiki essentially is the universal life force energy that is in every single thing in the world. It's love and it's light, and it transcends time and space, which is why I can do it from anywhere in the world. But it's essentially energy healing. When you are attuned, it's basically opening the doors or turning on the water faucet, if you will, so that I can more easily access it than any other person. We essentially all have it within us, but it just allows the body, mind, and spirit to relax at a really cell deep level, and it promotes balance in your body. It just changes and shifts the energy and can cleanse your body and just help to recharge your soul.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've definitely experienced that. I think one of the things that was most fascinating for me, because until I experienced it with Ashley, I had never had Reiki performed on me, but was that I would have as she was doing the Reiki, I both virtually and in person, I would have images come to mind. And then when she would kind of share afterwards what she experienced and the things that she saw and the colors and stuff, they were always so aligned. And you feel that. Like, I think if you're willing to feel that, you have to be open to that idea.
Absolutely. I feel like it's just like, it's magic. And I think that's what's so cool is it's just magical. It's magical for me to give it. It's magical to receive it. But you definitely, I mean, be open to it, I think, is the key.
Yeah, absolutely. The world is a wondrous place. And I think when we're closed-minded, we miss out on a lot of beautiful, weird, amazing things.
Yes, absolutely.
And I love that you said, I'm a witch, and like, that's how you identify. Yes. I love that so much. That, you know, that I have been exploring those things. And I think also when stepping into my power, the idea of reclaiming that word has been really big. But I know we both started kind of, well, at least I know I did, and I'm pretty sure you did, started from more of an evangelical perspective.
Yes.
I'd love to hear about that journey for you. What kind of launched that journey?
Yeah. Yes, I grew up in the church, and probably during the last 5 years when I intentionally sought healing in my life from chronic pain and grief, is when the shift kind of slowly started to happen. I started dabbling in tarot, I didn't go to moon circles until after my dad's death, but really trying to connect with the world in a different way from a different perspective, because growing up in the church, it's like you're taught these things, but I never really had the opportunity to question them. And then my dad died 2.5 years ago. And really since then, I've walked away from the church. And it's only been recently that I felt really comfortable claiming that word of being a witch, and feeling comfortable stepping away from the church. 'Cause there's a lot of stigmas.
Yes. So many. I don't want to gloss over what you just mentioned about your father's passing. We're definitely going to be discussing that and talking about grief, but I want to go in a little deeper here about what you were talking about, you know, walking away from that, not being able to question it as you were growing up. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, how much, I know my own experience, what that's been like, but I wonder how much, this sort of walking away from this patriarchal perspective and moving into this more divine feminine energy, how has that been healing, one, because of your grief, but also I know you've experienced other trauma as well. Mm-hmm. How has that been healing for you and meaningful for you?
I feel like I have been able just to connect to my body in a deeper way, like on a soul level, honestly. There were so many rules in the past. There was, and I was so disconnected from my body, partially because of physical pain that I experienced from a young age. I was never taught how to reconcile like my body and my soul. It's really been through these like divine feminine practices or these deeper reflections that I've had that I've been able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's been so beautiful to watch you on that journey too, because over the past couple of years, not only have you lost your father, mm-hmm. but you also dealt with your endometriosis too. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. It was 5 years ago, shortly before my 30th birthday, that I ended up in the hospital for about a week. I knew something was wrong, and I had been trying to figure out how to heal myself on my own. And then I was brought into the ER, diagnosed with endometriosis. And in the past 5 years, I've had 2 surgeries for it. And just trying to find healing. And that's really one of the biggest causes of my disconnection with my body, is that physical pain.
Right.
Because I mean, every month for my entire, a majority of my childhood. I was just in excruciating pain and told that it was normal. And it was really magical, honestly. The people who were put in my life right before my diagnosis, who had openly been talking about it, like, I have endometriosis, this is what it is. And so I was able to go to them afterwards and have this connection and support and resource. And that, because my initial hospitalization and stuff happened to be so public, I just naturally kind of started talking about it. And this is my, because I didn't really have a choice. People were like, well, what happened? And my sister and my mom and my dad, they wanted to keep people informed, like, why is Ashley in the hospital? What's going on? How can you support us through this process? And so I was just kind of forced into that, talking about it. And I honestly think that helped me then with my grief in, I have to talk about it. I have to share this because I can't hold that inside.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about. Watching you grieve has very publicly has taught me so much about grief. We have both been on a journey of grief, but it was kind of a different one. And you were so close to your father. Would you be comfortable sharing a little bit more about that grieving process for you and what it's looked like?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so weird because there's so many different kinds of grief, even just around like emotional grief, the loss of a relationship, but like a physical, like a death. There's many different kinds of grief in that. And if a person has been sick, like my dad was, there's the anticipatory grief that you're grieving what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. There's not anything that you can do to fix it or change it. And then there was a little gap, about 2 or 3 days when we had taken him home from the hospital to die. And there was the grief shifted from, I don't want him to go, to please take him, because you can't, witnessing someone go through the pain of death. I mean, I pray that it was peaceful for him, but there it just it shifts to please take him. And then as soon as he's gone, it's like, bring him back, but then there was the super early foggy grief for the few months after. And I was, one of my lifelines was books about other people's grief. I was like, maybe if somebody can define it for me, I'll know what to do and I'll know how to fix this, because that's our nature, especially in our culture, is people want to fix it. Immediate like reactions are, I'm so sorry, let me know what I can do. It's like, I don't know what to do. So it's been an interesting process of learning how to ask for help, too, in my grief. Like, I can't feed myself. Please, somebody, I mean, thank you for trying to feed me. It's even exhausting just to eat that food then. But things that I've really learned is just how lonely grief is. My grief was different than my sister's grief. It was different than my mother's grief, and it was lonely. Because we also couldn't, we didn't have the capacity to care for each other. We're just kind of hanging on. But I feel like one of the I don't know how to say it, one of the biggest lessons I've learned is just bearing witness to the unfixable pain. That is one of the most important things. It's like, please just see me. There was, I think, one of the hardest things is you want other people to understand how big and massive your grief is, and you want to saturate the world in it so that maybe they'll understand just how miserable and awful and heartbroken you feel. And yeah, so reading books, trying to understand other people's perspectives and listen to their stories, I felt like almost a community in that. And it was probably one of the best things I could have done for myself, is just read and just dig deeper. But it's like, as I've learned over the last 2.5 years, there's no words you can put to it to describe it. There's no, you just have to just be open and just be in it. If you really want to, I don't know, you just have to flow through it. And that's one of the hardest things, is that surrender.
That surrender. Oh God.
The worst.
I know you, Leo.
Yes. Leo. Oh, yes.
I'm an Aries. All the fire signs, we hate surrender. Oh, that's last measure. You posted or reposted from someone something the other day in your Instagram stories, and you were talking about everyone asking you, like, how can I help? How can I support you? Mm-hmm. But you posted in your stories the other day this thing, and I had seen it too, mm-hmm. and I had bookmarked it before I saw it in your story. I was like, yes, I agree. When people will say, well, basically what they're saying is, what can I do to comfort you to help with my discomfort?
Absolutely.
I think it was along those lines. Yeah. And what is that process been like for you of asking for the help you need, but not trying to make other people comfortable with your grief?
Yeah. I think one of the things is, I don't want to make other people comfortable with my grief. And that's probably, it's maybe not the healthiest idea, because I was so angry that my dad died, and I was so angry that my dad died, and you guys all get to go on with your lives. So a lot of my posting and stuff, it's like, I want other people to understand. And it's not their job to understand, but it would be nice if they tried.
Right.
And so it's like, I will post every month, you know, on the anniversary of his death, and try to explain it to people, because until you experience it, it's like, you don't know. And I had written, the summer after he died, I had written this whole post. It's like, you don't know until you know, until you experience grief. It's like, I had lost my grandparents when I was in college. And a few years, I guess, four years ago was when my last grandmother died. But it's like, until you experience that deep, like, life-changing grief, you don't know. And so it's like, I'm doing everything to, I want to explain it. I want to have these conversations, because I think it's Megan Devine, in her book, hers is probably one of the most helpful grief books. It's okay that you're not okay, or something to that effect. But it's like, we don't talk about the pain that can't be fixed. And we're the culture. We want to fix things. We don't like being uncomfortable, but if we're not willing to tell the stories, and to see each other and bear witness to each other, what are we going to do? This is life. Grief happens, yes. You know? What a beautiful way to support each other, to bear witness to each other's pain. That's life.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole, you know, birth, death, rebirth, yes, cycle, I feel like as Americans, we're not very comfortable with, like, we're very uncomfortable with death. You know, I know that this maybe wasn't an intention, mm-hmm. but a byproduct of you being so willing to share your grieving process publicly, mm-hmm. is, one, I really got to know your dad, mm-hmm. in a way that I didn't when he was alive, mm-hmm. Because you shared so much about him, and I loved that. I loved, like, those stories. Whenever I eat Topino, I think of him every time. Oh. And you taught me about my own grief, and helped me know my grief better through sharing your grief. How am I trying not to cry here? Yeah. But my aunt and uncle, I saw them a month and a half ago, mm-hmm. and then they got COVID, were hospitalized, and passed away within a day and a half of each other, both in their 50s. And I have grieved. I was close to them, not as close as we'd been in the past, but still, you know, very connected to them. And I have grieved very differently from the way my family, mm-hmm. has grieved. And watching you share your grief and your grieving experience, and also having followed your sister and seeing her experience of it, has helped me to get comfortable with my own way of grieving.
Yeah.
So I feel really, really thankful for that.
That's the thing, is when you're vulnerable, you give other people the permission to be vulnerable. And that's like, that's what I want to do. I want to give other people the permission to express themselves, feel their feelings, and acknowledge their grief, however it is, because the worst grief is your own. But when you experience that, you have such a deeper empathy for other people.
Yeah, absolutely. You wrote me this letter at the end of March of 2018. Is it okay if I read a little excerpt from it? And you, I had asked for love letters, and you sent me this letter, and you were, you started it off by saying, "These days, all my love stories are soaked in grief. Somehow, though, it makes them a little sweeter." And you, there was quite a bit of the story of your dad's passing in there, which I have to tell you, I opened it. I went to my mailbox. I was standing outside my house and I opened this there. I have no idea why. I never do that. I opened this there and I'm standing in the middle of the road reading your letter, bawling, literally sobbing. And I carried this letter with me all through my international travels last year. And I've reread it so many times, but in the end of it, you say, "I wish I could unknow the agony of death, but I found that you can't experience the brutal parts of life without also experiencing the beauty of it. In the deepest darkness of my life, love has shone through. Love was a stranger hugging me and praying for me in the hospital lobby. Love was meals. Love was wine and chocolate. Love was hugs. Love was cards, letters, and texts. Love was friends cleaning my apartment. Amen. Love was people showing up. Love was Cheetos and more wine. Love was listening. Love was gift cards, flowers, and Starbucks. Love was communion with homemade bread and leftover wine from Trader Joe's. Love was sitting in the quiet around his bed. Love was a cat sitting by his feet. Love was sponging his lips with water. Love was laughter from forgotten memories. Love was telling all of his bad dad jokes. Love was reminiscing, love was singing, love was praying. Love was taking turns holding each other as we cried on the floor. Love was everywhere." Oh my God. Like, I still, like, I just have chills. Yeah. Like, as I read you that, I just still feel the power and the weight of that. Yeah. Like, not weight, but just like the release of that. How does that feel or sound to you, like being read back to you now?
I'm a really good writer.
Yes, you are. You are, Ashley. I'm that so glad was you heard that.
A beautiful memory, because in the now grief, I sometimes forget the love that showed up, and it's such a beautiful reminder and a powerful memory. I mean, love is what this life is about. And the beautiful, beautiful ways that people showed up, like my friends cleaning my apartment. Like, do you know how hard it was to ask for help? But that's what I needed done. And they said, "Yes, please, like, let me help." And I mean, little things like, I mean, that wasn't little to me, but maybe it was little to them. If you can see those beautiful things in the midst of your pain and your darkness, I mean, I feel like it changes everything.
Yeah, it does. And I think writing those things down, which I'm gonna take pictures of the letter and send it to you when we're done here. But writing those things down in the midst of it, like you said, when you see that beauty in the midst of your grief, that is something tangible to hold on to, because life is cyclical and we're going to be faced maybe with different grief, but more grief.
Yes.
And what a beautiful thing to hold on to.
Yes. Yeah. One of the probably one of the most healing practices for me in the months after he died was journaling and writing a gratitude list. It's like, I didn't have a lot to be grateful for, but I would come up with something. And then I also added things that I could look forward to, because that was hard to find. And then I was able to look back a few months later. You know, I did have a lot to be grateful for. The Cheetos, the wine, the people who showed up. So just writing and releasing that from my body was really healing.
Yeah. I love how you just said releasing it from your body, and you were talking about those practices. I think ritual is so helpful in helping us process grief. I remember when I was getting divorced, I was in the midst of my divorce, and I would go to this coffee shop all the time, and the owner's mother was there one day, and she was a psychologist, and we just were talking about life, and she knew I was getting divorced, and she asked me how I was doing, and I was obviously having a really hard time. And she said this thing to me. She said, there are rituals that we have as a society for dealing with death and for dealing with our grief with death, but there are no rituals for divorce. You're going to have to make your own to deal with your grief. And so I wonder for you, because I've also seen you on this journey as we were talking towards a more ritual-based sacred practice. What has it been like to have rituals be a way for you to process your grief?
Ritual, I feel like creating rituals has been making it, it makes, I don't know, mundane areas of my life more sacred. And I want to notice that in my life. I want to honor little things in different ways. So a really weird and random ritual for me became making kombucha. I ordered a kit online, and I was just like, we're not going to buy it at the store anymore. I'm going to do this. And it was probably like a month or two after my dad had died, and my sister's like, you are crazy. Like, what are you doing? And I just went crazy. But the, like, I would turn on music. I would turn on like DJ Khaled or like Celine Dion and blast it and have my kombucha nights like once a week or every other week. And like, just physically like creating something with my hands, like, like finding, like creating flavors or whatever. And like that physical act of creation was probably one of the biggest parts of my healing.
Okay. Two things. One, I love that you were like, I put on DJ Khaled or Celine Dion.
Right. There's the same thing. I mean, yeah, like maybe, my sister, she would be in her room doing calligraphy, and I was like in the kitchen, and she was just like, what are you doing? Like, I'm grieving. Like, this is my journey.
I love that so much. And also, one of the things I love about the fact that like you used kombucha as a way to like physically process your grief, like creation in that in itself, but also just for people who are listening, when we talk about ritual, when we talk about sacred practices, it doesn't have to be some thing that you're like, oh, wild Californians do that
crazy, right,
you know, spiritual thing. It's everyday sort of actions that you're taking that help you heal, that help you move forward. Yeah. Maybe it's your coffee that you make every morning. Maybe it's making your bed every day.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I think when you are mindfully or intentionally doing something, and you're just maybe slowing down for, you know, a minute or two while you make your coffee, or while you like, I don't know, say an affirmation or something in the morning. But just, I think the intentionality is so key. And like, what a beautiful way to live your life. You could go to Starbucks, you know, go through the drive-thru or whatever every single day. But what if you took like 5 minutes and you just gave yourself that time to, I don't know, drink your coffee slowly, or just something to honor yourself, and just bring more beauty into your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I still, this is a very small part of my day, but, I like have found this passion for gardening, which is just hilarious to me. Like, it's such a slow, chill hobby. But every morning I go and I water my plants and I pull off any dead leaves or, you know, check their soil, figure out what they need. And that is such a healing practice too. I think we have to open ourselves to unexpected things like kombucha. Who would have guessed?
Oh my gosh,
You
my
know?
dad probably he would have been like, "You are the weirdest girl that I know." But he would have put up with me and he would have tried one of my potions like he did when I was like 7. So, but I think
I love that.
I saw somebody on Instagram this week, and it's like doing something new in when you're grieving, something that maybe that the person that you lost didn't like you didn't do it with, or you didn't participate in whatever activity it is with that person, just trying something new. Even if you don't end up loving it, even if it's just like, well, that was a weird phase or whatever. But I think it's like just expanding ourselves and trying new things.
Yes. Yes. You know what that made me think of is tattoos. You and I both have gotten several tattoos in the past. I think you have quite a few more than me, but in the past 7 years since we've known each other. And you didn't have tattoos, I don't think, when I first met you.
I did. I got my first tattoo when I was 18, and I
Oh, okay.
was so nervous to tell my dad because he was a very conservative, like, straight-laced
Yes.
man, and so I was nervous, but he was stern with me. But I was 18. Actually, no, it was after I was 18. It was after college, but he was like jokingly like mad at me, but I was just nervous giggling because I could not
Right.
tell. But yeah,
Yeah.
since then I've gotten quite a few more, but
Have you found that to be the reason I bring it up is have you found that to be therapeutic and part of your healing process?
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I 2 weeks after he died, I found a card with his handwriting, and I went straight to my tattoo shop, and I was like, put his writing on my arm. I want it
Yeah.
close to me. But then I think also, just the meaningful, like, what do I want? Like, what do what me words words are hard. Like, what is important to me, and what do I want to carry with me in my life?
Yes.
My most recent one was the Ouroboros and the poppies,
Love
and
it.
that, like, it just the divine timing of my tattoo artist being available and just everything falling into place with it. That has been such a sacred practice, and it's a beautiful reminder that I get to see now every day.
Yeah. And both of those things, man, they resonate with me so much. I have looked, I love poppies, first of all. I just think they're such a wild, glorious flower. And then, of course, you and I have had conversations about the Ouroboros before as well. Yeah, I'm with you on putting things on my body that I want to carry with me. I try not to put things that feel temporary, but things that feel very eternal. On my body, so that when I am old, I'll look at them and I will remember, but they will also have new meaning. This first one that I got it in 2014, and it says, "Words create, words destroy. I choose light." And I always thought of that as a reminder to like be very careful with my words. And then last year, when I was in Ireland and I was processing some really intense trauma from my past that I hadn't really faced before. I had this moment where I was like addressing my, like I visualized the men who had abused me and I was addressing them and telling them it wasn't my fault, it was your fault. Like all of this kind of thing. I was like walking through it and just saying like I'm almost like putting a curse on you. You're not going to hurt anyone anymore. Like whatever. I was in a very trauma brain state, but I was trying to kind of take back my power. And as I'm doing this, I look down and I look at my arm and I'm like, words create, words destroy. I choose light. And I realized like I have creative ability, but I also have destructive ability. And that's not bad. Sometimes the light is served best by destruction, you know?
Yes, that's
And
beautiful.
so I love how when you get that on your body, you think that it's meaningful in one way, but there are so many layers still for you to uncover.
Yes.
Did you, when you first got your tattoos, did you feel like, this is probably cheesy that everyone says, but did you feel like it had always been there and you just uncovered it?
Yes, I love that perspective. Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
me too. Me too. It didn't feel like it was being inked. It felt
No.
like it was just being uncovered.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you do not only kombucha, and also Reiki, which you've told us a little bit about, but also you do some tarot readings, or you have in the past. I would
Yes.
love for you to share a little bit about your experience with that and what that kind of a session looks like for maybe someone who's never done it before.
Yeah. Tarot is one of those things that I found a few years before my dad had died, but it wasn't until probably the fall after that I took an actual class online and really dug into it. For me, it's been a tool for reflection and a way to connect with my intuition.
Yes.
And that was another really powerful tool for my grief process and my healing. For me, I don't believe that tarot is about predicting the future or telling
Yes.
horoscopes or fortune telling or any of that. The teacher who I have taken many classes with, her name is Lindsay Mack, and she teaches it from a soul perspective, and it is something that I've adopted because it speaks so strongly to me. But it's using tarot as a mirror for the present moment. So it's a tool to heal, to grow, to find support. And basically, I use it to tap into what I already know.
Yes.
So I just use it for guidance, for clarity, or validation. And one thing that I really like that Lindsay teaches is there's no good or bad in tarot. Every
Right.
card is a medicine for your soul, and it's an invitation for your soul's growth. So,
Yeah.
with a reading, I haven't done many. I don't do in-person readings mostly because I'm still learning to find my
Right.
voice and feel comfortable and confident in it. But I do distance readings via email, and really, I end up coming up with a spread of what I feel called to when I tap into my intuition. So I don't know, anywhere from like 3 to 5 cards, depending on the situation. And I just drop into my body, connect with my intuition, and ask the questions and have my guides help me interpret them. And end up writing something up and sending it off. And, if it doesn't resonate with someone, I say, take it with a grain of salt. Maybe this is something that will resonate with you, down the road next year or
Yeah.
something like that. But I really have to drop into that trust. Like, this may not make sense to me at all, but I'm going to trust myself and know that, like, what is meant to come out will arise.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that perspective of using tarot and using oracle cards for inner work,
Yes.
not for predicting the future. I'm so with you. I personally don't think the future is fixed.
Yeah.
I think that every choice that we make affects what happens in the future. And one of the things that I really loved about the tarot reading that you did for me was you. In the reading, you said a lot of things, but you asked like 14 different questions. And that was amazing because I sat down and I wrote down those questions and then I did journaling about that. And it really helped me understand where I was in that moment better, like doing that inner work. And I
Yeah.
think coming from this sort of evangelical perspective that we came from, where we were taught, you know, the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked, you know, and all of these things, this is a practice that has helped me, and it sounds like has helped you tap into our intuition, hear it, and trust it.
Yes, absolutely. I feel like it is one of the most important things that I have been able to like do and like foster the like if you can't trust your intuition, if you can't trust yourself, like what are you doing, you know?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And it's such a beautiful and like magical experience when you listen and like slow down enough to like really, really listen and say,
yes,
what is my body telling me? What is my soul telling me? What is the next step for me? And once I feel like if you can practice that and get more in tune with your intuition, then the yeses are easier to hear, or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are the no's.
Yes. Yes. Hell no.
Yeah, man, I feel like I've been having an opportunity to practice no a lot lately, which is not a strong suit of mine. And you're right, tapping into that intuition definitely makes it easier to hear those things.
Yes. And it is a practice. I mean, you have to, it's not like, oh, I know everything now. It's every single time I'm going to have to practice this.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really interesting. I just made a video the other day where I was talking about how like you're a priority, like make yourself a priority, but also expect that in your relationships. Right.
Yes.
And there was someone who had come into my life in a romantic sort of way who didn't have a lot of space to build something, but still wanted something anyway. And I had said, no, I want to be a priority if we're going to do this. And I'd made this video. I had like set this intention, like I'm going to be a priority. I will say no to the things. And it comes back around again, of course. Yesterday.
Oh, so no.
I was like, I have to practice saying this again, you know, and trusting myself.
Yes.
And I'm just learning that when we say no to good things because they don't really align with where we're going, great things come along too.
Yes, absolutely.
So I've watched you in your journey over almost a decade. And I feel like this year specifically, even the past few months, I feel like I've watched you like really embrace yourself and get comfortable with yourself and like step into your power. There was this moment, and I don't know if you're comfortable with it or not, but when you cut your hair, you shaved your head. I don't know that you fully shaved it, but you cut it very short.
Yes.
And I felt something just like transform in you.
Yes.
In that moment. And I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, that was, I mean, quarantine, am I right? Like it's like I haven't had anything but time and anything but like ways to, I mean, time with myself. What do I want in life? What do I need to physically cut away? And my hair, I mean, it was just, I'm like, why not? Like, that's a lot of my stuff at this point is like, why not? Like, and I think I had said in my comment on my, when I posted about it, it's like, I don't know exactly why or how or when it happened. It just happened. And I'm listening to the yeses and, I don't know, doing the next thing and really learning to stand in my power. But I mean, I'm grateful. I will say I'm grateful in some ways for the opportunity that this year has brought to really slow down, because I wouldn't be the same person if things were normal. And thank God I'm not. I'm a roller skater chick with a shaved head. Like I'll take it.
I love it. I love that so much. Yeah. But what's fascinating about it, I want, like, I know, obviously you know this because you're experiencing it, but I want listeners to know, it wasn't just like Ashley shaving her head that made me be like, wow, she's stepping into her power.
Yeah.
You can just see it in the things that she writes and in the chances that you're taking, like with creating new things, even with creating collage art and things like that. Like I see that you unafraid to just be like, here's where I am. This is what I think is wonderful.
It's like I'm giving myself permission to do the things that bring me joy and step into who I've always dreamed of being, like, in little ways. Like, I cook dinner in the kitchen with my sister while listening to music. I have flowers on my table. I'm dancing and I'm drinking a glass of wine. And like, how beautiful is that? That's like such a small thing, but like, I want to live in those ways that I feel alive and I feel the most me. And so shaving my head, like, I feel like even if you look at pictures, like, especially over the past 5 years, like something like maybe something has shifted in my eyes. I don't know what it is. There's more light and I will take it.
Yeah. I see you coming home to yourself. Yes. That's what I see in your eyes. You know, Allura. Mm-hmm. Allura.
Yes.
We're kind of, the three of us are part of a group, but I recorded with her earlier this week and we were talking about, I was saying, cause you were talking about this practice of beauty that you are doing and it's just like resonating with me. And her and I were talking about it. And I said, you know, beauty for me was a defiant act, an act of rebellion against, the trauma that I'd experienced and all the pain.
Yeah.
And I see that in you too. Yeah. Beauty is defiance. Yeah. Such an amazing thing. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up here, but I would love if there's anything else that we've talked about, or maybe we haven't talked about, anything that you want to leave listeners with or share with them.
That's a good question. I mean, I would say, like, if I could leave people with just a few words, I would say show up for the people in your life. Love each other well.
Love each other well. That's a great place to end on. So everyone, please go and follow Ashley on her Instagram. It's at Ashes and Intuition or at Ashley Lovely. And there are many E's in there.
Yes, all the E's.
You will find her. And thank you so much for joining me. This has been such a beautiful conversation.
Thank you, Melissa. I've loved having this conversation with you.
Yeah, we will definitely do it again.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
All right, take care. Love you.
Thanks, love you. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today. You can follow Ashley at Ashes and Intuition or at Ashley Lovely. Lots of E's. You can also support the show via Venmo at Melissa B. Hawks. And again, thanks for joining us. Thanks for sticking with us through this challenging and beautiful conversation about grief. Love you. Mean it.